The Inside Aperture podcast introduces you to the experts who use Apple's professional image management application to organize, edit, and output their pictures. Each show features tips and techniques that will help you improve the quality of your photography and bring efficiency to your workflow.
I'm here with Joe Busink, and I caught up with him yesterday, actually. He gave a really great talk at WPPI about finding the passion and the artist inside of us and bringing that to our photography. How are you doing with this show?
Pretty darn good. Thanks for asking. It's been quite busy, but it's been actually very, very good for us.
Yeah, I think, first of all, you had a full ballroom yesterday, and it was really great to see because you gave a lot of great information. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today was about how you go about training your eye to see good shots and how it's not something that you necessarily just turn off and on. This is kind of a constant thing for you. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Basically, I've been teaching myself for the past 12 years how to see, and not just with my eyes, but with my heart. So one of the strengths I have at weddings is to see the emotion of the wedding. And when I'm not at a wedding, what I tend to do is continue practice seeing, and I might be in a mall or a supermarket, and I will walk around, and if I see a moment, I will snap my fingers, or I will say click in my head, or I say, that's it, that's the shot. And I do this because what I'm training myself to do is that I'm training my brain to see the moment and to respond to it. The response is a physical one with the snapping of the fingers, or a verbal one where I say click to myself. And then when I actually come on a Saturday to a wedding, I have a camera in my hand. So now when the brain sees the moment or the heart feels the moment, I just reach out and I grab the shot. I no longer do the click, or I don't snap my fingers anymore, but it's the camera that I literally jump out there and shoot with. And often I don't even get the camera to my eye. I see the moment so fast, and I just react to it. And I think that's the practice, is I'm trying to react to the moments, because there are times where I have a second or third shooter on the dance floor with me, and he or she might have the camera in the nook of their arms as they're looking onto a beautiful moment that's unfolding in front of their faces, and they're smiling from ear to ear. And I know the minute they're smiling, they're onto a moment, and I want to smack them upside the head because the camera is still in their arm. They should have been reacting to it and shooting. And I think that's where practice comes in. And I'm a work in progress. I will always be a work in progress. I will never get this down. And if I ever thought I did, it's it for me. You know, I think I'm done as an artist. So it's something I just continue to do. And the more I do it, the more things I see. And that's what's incredible. So my eyes, my heart, everything opens up the more I practice this method.
This is interesting to me because a lot of what you're talking about reminds me of sort of a zone that I go into sometimes when photography becomes easier. But yet you're at a wedding, you're working with clients and all that sort of. How do you sort of balance that zone of shooting with, you know, being a good ambassador?
Well, interestingly enough, I've made myself the second shooter on all my jobs for the past year. I have a primary person that handles all the formals and anything mom might want, table shots, what have you. And I am literally the assistant / second shooter. So no one really pays attention to me anymore. And I know the bride knows that I'm like the main gun, but it's not necessary for Aunt Harriet or Uncle Henry to know that I'm not the main gun. So what ends up happening is that, let's say, the reception, after Kevin, my assistant, or whoever I'm using at the time as a primary shooter, has done the formals, everybody in the bridal party, the families, they all are aware of he's the main guy. And so at the reception, they might come up to him for that grip and grin shot, is what I call when they want a mug for the camera. They don't bother me because I'm just the second shooter. So I have freedom. I literally have freedom at every wedding that I shoot now to shoot in my way of shooting.
This is an idea that I definitely think I'm going to steal because I just love it. I just love the freedom of being able to roam around. As a primary shooter, a lot of times I feel like I get stuck with a lot of the work that I don't want to do when I really want to be doing the shots that the second shooter over there has. So this is a great tip. Hey, another thing that you mentioned to me that I thought was really cool was that you keep your camera settings simple. And you know what your camera's going to do. You want to talk a little bit about how you get the most out of your camera, but you don't let it get in the way of the shoot?
Part of the reason that I try to keep this really simple is that since I move so quickly and respond so quickly, the last thing I need to do is try and remember what settings I had it on because I needed to have control over the image or the situation or the lighting, whatever. So I know how to compensate for it. So I leave it in the P mode, P for what I call professional. And if I know there's, say, a shot that I'm looking at that I'm responding to that is backlit, I may quickly point the camera down towards somewhere where it's an average metering setup where I have half of the backlight and half of the ground or something. Lock the camera's meter, come back up and shoot. Rather than turning it on average or spot metering, which I know, I will forget to turn it back to evaluative metering. So I'd rather think of little tricks like that to compensate for so that I don't have that get in the way of my style of shooting.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. One of my sort of magic settings I like to do sometimes with flash is drop it down to like a 30th of a second or something so I get a little bit more ambient light. And so I'll just put it in manual mode, and sure enough, someone will run outside or there'll be something outside. I'll run out there and start shooting and forget to put the thing back into program mode and blow out a whole series of really good shots. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, same here. And here is where it's even harder for me. I shoot film still, partly. So having said that, I can't go to the back of the camera and take a peek at what I just did, because with the digital, when I do shoot some of it digital, I can check every so often, see that I made that mistake, if that's what I did, and I can't do it with film.
That actually is a good segue, because you shoot a lot of film. A lot of shots that you showed yesterday were film-based shots that you had scanned or whatever, and I'm interested in your comments about the different qualities that you get from film. You have someone that you work with that does printing, and then yet there are certain things about digital that seem attractive to you too. How's that, you know, that whole thing shaking up for you right now?
I think where I am now, I'm roughly 50-50, 50% film, 50% digital. And prior to this, and this has been, since the last year sometime, when Apple finally approached me with a workflow solution that I didn't see before that was workable for me, that it was as easy as taking my film every Monday to the lab, dropping it on the counter and saying, see you on Thursday. So, you know, there was a lot of labor spent in front of the computer trying to process stuff and tweak things, all that. So I just started, since Aperture came out, started utilizing digital a lot more. And I'm really liking the look of digital. I'm not against it. As a matter of fact, some of the prints I make are 30 by 40 inches. I can't get that from my 35 millimeter negatives comfortably. But there's a characteristic to film-based images that my printer, Robert Cavalli, prints on double-weight fiber paper that I just can't seem to get from digital. So there's that timeless look, the 1930s, 40s, 50s, revisited with film, and yet there's that modern era look with the digital color that I can get. And now I'm converting some of my digital as well to black and white to see what that might pan out to look like for me.
It's an interesting process. I still shoot film myself, too. And I was listening to Art Wolf talk the other night, and he's saying, you know, I shoot all digital now, and I really like the look of Fujichrome. And so what we do is we pretty much, you know, emulate that look to our digital stuff. And I was thinking, well, that's interesting. But then again, digital has its own thing. And, you know, so I'm not sure where I kind of fall, you know, along all this stuff right now.
It's really funny because since this wonderful revolution that we have now been undergoing in photography with digital, I see all these people trying to emulate film. My question is this to them. If you want to make it look like film, why not just shoot film? Because digital has its own look and its own quality. So why compromise that by trying to make it look like film when you can actually shoot film still? It's still a viable solution. And so people ask me, well, so why do you even bother shooting film? Well, I have enough clientele like Steven Spielberg or any of the high-end celebrities that I might shoot their weddings for who ask for me to shoot black and white, shoot it in film. So my answer is it's not broken. I don't need to fix it.
I think that's especially true in black and white. I know I take a lot of pride in being able to shoot digitally and convert the black and white and have it look pretty good. And I've played, I've got my own secret sauce. And then one of my assistants, who is a very good black and white shooter, insists on shooting film for black and white. And I'll always try to fool her. I'll show her some prints that I made digitally captured of black and white, and I'll say, you know, don't these look fabulous? And she goes, yeah, they're okay for digital. And I swear, she can always tell the difference. It's really something.
Absolutely. And my clientele are educated at that level as well when, for the most part, they collect fine art photographs. So they know what a double-weight fiber print looks like compared to something that was printed digital. They know the difference.
You know, one of the things I like about this show, WPPI, is that it treats wedding photographers with a lot of respect, and you know, and respects the artist that's in them. And I noticed that was in your talk too. You know, you've done a lot of different types of photography. You seem to really enjoy wedding photography. Could you just kind of wax a little bit on that for me?
It's my passion. I realized that I go to a party every weekend where nothing but love is abound. So I feel very blessed and honored to be invited in. You know, yes, I get paid for what I do. However, I feel like I've been invited in the most important day of their lives. I mean, I think next to births, weddings are very much the most important day in a couple's lives. And it's not about two people getting married. It's about two communities getting married. And so for me, the amount of photo ops are incredible. And it's always beautiful. It's emotional. It's romantic. It's all those wonderful things. And I want to be part of that. I want to be able to document it. I want to be able to bring my client an album that 20 years later, when they open up the book, they can remember. They can say, oh my gosh, I remember what I was feeling in this moment. I remember what I was thinking in this moment. And if I've done that, if I'm able to do that for people, then that's was it. That was the payoff.
That's a huge payoff. I mean, one of the things that I like about wedding photography is they want you there. Unlike a lot of other types of photography where you feel like you have to sort of intrude, they are opening their arms, and I'm amazed at how quickly you become part of the family.
Exactly, and I start that in the very beginning after my pitch and I've been hired. I try to establish a relationship with my clients because by the time the wedding rolls around, I want to be considered a friend, a family member, so that they open up like books to me. And that's based in trust. And the trust comes from knowing who I am, from me knowing who they are and what they like and how they like to be photographed. So it's really important for me to get the client to know who I am.
One other thing I want to touch on before I forget, and you mentioned this, as much as you love wedding photography, there are still moments where you sort of feel yourself kind of, not maybe getting in a rut, but maybe a little stale. And you had some good tips, I thought, for, you know, helping us stay fresh and helping us, you know, then come back to what we really like shooting with new eyes and with new energy. Could you talk a little bit about that?
One of the things I've realized after a few years of shooting nothing but weddings is that it's repetitious. I mean, and I am the first to say that every wedding is different. So one should not get two wedding albums together that are very similar. They should be different. However, there's still the perfunctory, you know, you have the ceremony, you have the cake cutting, there are markers at every wedding. So it can be, if you consider this a job or a 9-to-5, a paycheck at the end of the week, a very boring thing after a couple of years. Now, I noticed after 8 or 9 years, I started feeling like, okay, I need to do something else. And I started looking for other things to shoot because it wasn't just weddings that I'm passionate about. It's photography that I'm passionate about. And I think that's first and foremost. And having said that, I started seeing that there are other things that I could photograph that would equally bring me passion. And if I could find whatever that little niche might be in between my gigs on the weekend, it would make me feel fresh for that weekend's wedding because I was excited about doing something else. So I had a dog project that I've, you know, where I photographed an English bulldog. I have a book in the works on autism, kids with autism, and these have brought me so much pleasure that when I started working on these projects, when I came to the wedding, I was just so psyched and so pumped up to go for the wedding because I had done other things that I loved in photography, not just weddings.
One of the things I noticed when I look at your wedding shots is that you seem to like existing light a lot. I did see some flash, but not very much. Can you kind of tell me about the thinking process there?
Sure. I've often said that available light, if I can get away with it, I love available light, and if I can shoot the whole wedding that way, I would, but every once in a while, my flash is available. If I need it, you know, I have to use it, but it just seems more natural to me. I'm never, ever trying to light anything perfectly because we concentrate, especially today now with digital, we seem to be concentrating so much on perfecting the image. Well, here's the quote from me. There's no such thing as a perfect image, only a perfect moment. And so if we would just think about that for a second. Instead of trying to create a perfect image and work more in trying to capture that moment in camera and then work on the enhancement of it later rather than trying to perfect it at the end, I think we'd be more open to those moments, you know, and I think that for me is the most important part.
I agree. What tips do you have for people that are getting into wedding photography? One of the things that I'm a little concerned about is that sometimes people see that, oh, well, you know, I can make money at photography doing weddings, and they don't really go into it, maybe with the passion and artistry that I'd like to see. Can you just talk a little bit about maybe a good frame of mind for going into wedding photography if you're thinking about this?
For me, it's been to be true to myself, to always be passionate about what I do. Literally, like I said earlier, if you consider this a job or just a 9-to-5 or a paycheck, I think the work suffers. You won't be able to come up to its ultimate level. When you are passionate, you can't help but do absolutely the best work you can do. And that's one of the things I really go after is that passion and stay passionate. So a lot of times people lose the passion along the way. But if you just remember where you started and tap back into that passion and continue to refresh it, I think one can continue going forward with the same amount of vim and vigor. When people ask me, you know, the people that are business-oriented always talk about how you shoot for the client. Well, I never shoot for the client. I shoot for myself. And what I do is I attract clients that identify my work and that relate to my work. And what ends up happening is that they end up loving it as much as I do. So I would never have to shoot for them. As long as I shoot for myself and attract those same clients that were on the same page, reading the same book, I'll be obviously shooting for them. It's an automatic. If you start stretching yourself and telling them, oh, no, I can do that, what ends up happening, I found for myself in the very beginning I did this because I needed all the work I could get. I would stretch myself and become a traditional photographer when I wasn't one and doing a lot of formals and table shots. I hated it. And so this is a quick way to really dislike weddings if you start shooting in a manner that you're really not comfortable with.
Well, Joe, it's been really great sitting down and talking with you about this. I tell you, I'm coming away from this show. There's lots of things I want to apply to my photography. You've provided me with lots of tips, and I'm ready to go shoot a wedding right now. So I really appreciate you sitting down, and good luck with as you move into Aperture and so forth. I think it's exciting stuff, and I look forward to see what you do in the coming years.
Thanks so much. It was my pleasure being here.
The Inside Aperture podcast is produced by O'Reilly Media. To learn more about Aperture, be sure to visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture for articles, tutorials, blogs, and podcasts. This show is produced on a Mac using Soundtrack Pro. See you next time.